Welcome to So What Do You Think, a podcast where we discuss weird and unsolved mysteries and events and give you our completely unprofessional opinion on them. I'm Jane. With me here is Bea.
Hello.
It's been so long. It's been like a month since we recorded and it's sad. We've just spent the last 20 minutes just catching up before we started recording this, just so you all know.
Yes. Life has been busy.
It really has. It really has. So this will probably be episode one in the series. And if we did have to take a longer than usual break, we do apologize. But unfortunately, that old thing called life has gotten back at us now and stuff's been busy. But we're here now. We're here now. We're gonna do this. So tonight, we have quite a well-known case, a young girl who disappeared under extremely mysterious circumstances. The case has actually been featured on America's Most Wanted back when it first happened. So we're in Bay Village, Ohio, talking about the abduction and murder of 10-year-old Amy Mihaljevic. Amy lived with her family in quite an affluent area of Cleveland. Her mum worked for a newspaper, this newspaper was called the Trade and Times, and she had recently gone from part-time to full-time. So Amy, one day, she's at home alone. Nobody's there. I guess, did I say what year we're in? No, we're in 1989. So we're back in the day where you left your 10-year-old child home alone. It was completely normal. Mm. Suffice to say, it was not an abnormal thing for Amy to be home alone that day. So Amy got a phone call one day, not long after her mum got this promotion, I suppose you can say. She got this phone call and it was from a man who said his name was Frank. And he told Amy that he was a co-worker of her mum's. He said that, you know, her mum had just got the promotion and it was really excited and he was going to go get her a gift for this. And he asked Amy if she would like to come along with him and get a gift for her as well. For some reason, Amy says yes. I mean, we can't really say why 10-year-olds think the way that they do. I suppose things seemed a little bit safer back then. I'm not sure. So the caller says, awesome, I'll meet you at the shops later on. They made a time. And he says, we'll go from there. And she does all of this without her parents knowing because, you know, it is a surprise after all. We know that this happened because she told a school friend about it. So it's October 27th, 1989. She goes to the Bay Square Plaza after school where it's assumed that she met this guy. And she was seen by two classmates at the shops with a white man with a black shaggy hairdo. One friend saw the man walk up to Amy and put his arm on her back and say something to her, and then he led her away. And that is the last time that she is ever seen alive. So, quick pause. Let's just talk about the whole going with a stranger situation, because I think that that's like important to talk about the context of that. So, like I said, it's the 80s, so things were potentially a little bit safer than they are now. We didn't have online predators and that sort of thing. However, I feel like the 80s was like peak stranger danger time, don't you think? Like, I know that you weren't around for most of the 80s, but it was like...
I was one when this was happening.
Yeah, so you probably, you know, don't have as much context, but I feel like the 90s was sort of the roll on from that. But there was things like safety houses and there were huge campaigns against stranger danger and that sort of thing. And she had actually had a stranger danger talk at school that day by the police. They'd actually come to the school to talk about stranger danger. So it was quite a big thing. And I remember it when I was a kid. Yeah, it was a massive thing. You know, you've got to have safety words and there's safety houses and, you know, you need to make sure that you're not going with anyone that you don't know. And we were told about the techniques, like they might tell you that they've got a puppy in their car or they might try and give you candy or something like that, you know. Like I just remember growing up and being very, very hyper aware of stranger danger. And it's also like before we knew that it's actually usually somebody that you know that's more likely to abduct you than a stranger, we know that now. So it has become still stranger danger, but less about that and more about don't keep secrets and that sort of thing, because it's usually somebody that you know that would be molesting a child. Like, okay, be aware of the creepers in the white vans, but also just be aware of shady Uncle Bob as well, you know, who insists that you sit on his lap every time he comes over. I know, yeah. So gross. I was actually talking to my grandmother once years ago and she's like, yeah, back when I was a child, which would have been in like the 30s and 40s, she's like, yeah, every family had a creepy uncle and you never wanted to sit on his lap. And he was just well known as like a, a creepy guy that would like fill you up when you was around you, and it was kind of just like accepted. I was like, yeah, so gross.
Yeah,
like, yeah, I can't imagine.
It was a pretty normal thing. I don't know why it was allowed, but yeah,
it was. I don't even know that it was necessarily allowed. It was just more like a blind eye was turned.
But more so, I don't mean allowed. I mean in the sense that you were told that children are expected to show affection towards family.
Yes, no matter what. Yeah,
no matter what. Whereas now there's a lot more of a focus on, no, you don't have to hug or kiss granny and grandpa just because they want you to.
Yeah, it's
you
all about
do it if you're comfortable doing it.
It's all about body autonomy and that sort of thing.
I get, because I mean, unfortunately, plenty of grandpas have been horrible as well.
Yeah, exactly.
And parents like just didn't think either as well. Like, why is my 4-year-old suddenly reluctant to be, you know, around this family member? They just didn't think of it.
Yeah, exactly. So I think in a situation like this with Amy, it's easy to think, oh, this silly, naive little girl. Yeah. But, you know, I don't know. This wasn't a help me look for my puppy situation. This wasn't a come and get some candy out of my car situation, you know. Things happen really fast and kids kind of get carried away sometimes and then it's too late. So I think that, you know, this was planned. This guy actually phoned her on her home phone number at a time when her parents weren't around and planned this. So
yeah,
he's made plans, had time to think about it, and then followed through with it. So I feel like, this could have been a person that she'd met before. What are your thoughts?
I feel like maybe, yeah, possibly. But then again, like, you still have this, even if you've been told, like, you know, stranger danger and this is what people might say, you still are trusting of an adult, especially when an adult says that they know your parents.
Yeah, that's true.
So
that's what they'd always say with the stranger danger stuff. They're like, someone might come along and say that they know your mum and they want to pick you up for her because she's been held up or something. So, yeah, it's true. I think it's worth, you know, it warrants noting anyway that, you know, it could have been someone that she'd met before.
Yeah.
So Amy vanishes. No one sees her again alive. And it's 3.5 months later on February 8th, 1990, when Amy's body is found in a field off a road in Ashland County, Ohio, which is about a 45-minute drive from Bay Village. It was quite an isolated area, leading police to think that maybe it could have been someone local. It was like one of those places where you only really knew about it if you lived in the area. Amy was found face down, stabbed to death, and there was blood in her underwear, so it looked as though she'd been sexually assaulted as well. The killer had taken souvenirs too. Her horse riding boots, her backpack, her school binder and earrings were all taken. She appeared to have been killed very soon after being taken as well, because they found undigested food in her stomach that they decided could have been Chinese food. So it sounds as though he may have even taken her out for food or something like that before this happened. And there were small gold-coloured fibres on her body as well. So there's a huge investigation, but really it just goes nowhere. I mean, we've talked about it before. This was a time where we just didn't really have the forensics that we have now, and a lot of cases just went unsolved. The first bit of a breakthrough doesn't come through until November 2006, so really, you know, a long time later, when some women came through and said that as children, they had received similar phone calls around that time. So they were roughly the same age as Amy in the late 80s, and they'd got these phone calls too. They'd received calls from a man who said that he worked with their mothers and that she'd recently got a promotion, and they wanted to go and get her a present. So I think we can say that this is probably the same guy. I mean, it's a weird MO, right? So he must have stuck with it. I mean, I wonder how many people he called before he hit the jackpot with Amy, right? I mean, we say, oh, he knew that her mum had got a promotion, but it's like, maybe he didn't. Maybe he just sort of lucked out, you know? Maybe he just had been using that technique, and finally he got a little girl whose mum literally did just get a promotion, so... All these girls also lived in the area, and some even had unlisted numbers. So that's very interesting. If you remember back in the day, if you had an unlisted number, you weren't in the phone book. You know, people couldn't look you up or anything like that. So that's sort of, to me, says that he might have worked somewhere that had access to phone numbers.
Yeah. Although he did, in fact, know them somehow.
Yeah, maybe he knew all of them. Yeah, maybe he worked at a school or something like that even. So a link between Amy and the other girls was looked at, but the only thing that they could actually find was that they had all visited the Lake Erie Nature and Science Center recently and signed the visitors' logbook with their names and phone numbers. So there you go. That might answer that question. So this looked like a promising lead, but it went nowhere because I guess you can't sort of have evidence of who's reading a logbook. Now, this is a case where investigators take another shot at it every few years. It's quite a huge case over there in Ohio. So every now and then they'll sort of get the box out again and have another look at it and see if they can get anything new. And this has actually led to a few developments over the years. In 2016, they looked at a blanket and a curtain that had been found near her body. So it wasn't on her body or around it, but it was kind of near it. And they actually looked at it again and found that it had dog hairs that were very similar to Amy's dog. I'm not really sure what to do with that information, though. I don't know. What do you reckon about that?
Where did they find it?
Near her body.
Well, I don't think that's really anything. It just means maybe he wrapped her up in a blanket.
Yeah, but how would it have her dog hairs on it? I don't know.
Because the dog hairs are on her.
True. She had been at school all day.
Yeah, but I mean, what sort of dog are we talking about?
Yeah,
it could be one dog fur just implants into things.
Absolutely. The amount of times it got to work.
A short-haired dog,
Your door's moving.
My door's going to close. It's really windy here.
Okay.
It's going to slam. Like
someone's shutting your door behind you.
Stop it. Don't.
I have expected.
Do you want me to continue recording? Sergeant, protect me.
Where is he? He's hiding.
He's down here. He's not even doing anything.
Okay, it mustn't be a ghost then if he's okay. No,
it's the wind. It's really windy outside. There's storms coming through.
So anyway, yeah, the blanket. So I find it hard with, like, identifying dog hairs as well. Like, I don't know how people go, oh, yeah, that's definitely come from a whatever dog. Okay, you can look at some hair and go, yeah, that definitely looks like a husky or something like that. But, like, what sort of dog did she have? I don't know. It could have just been generic dog hair, you know? So, yeah, the blanket, I don't know, maybe a red herring, maybe something else. I'm not sure. So there haven't really been many publicly listed suspects in this case. There was this weird event where not long after she disappeared, a man went up to a Salvation Army shop and rang the bell. When the shop assistant came to the door, he just, like, randomly confessed to Amy's murder. He's like, I did it. I was the one. He then went in, did some shopping, came out, went back again, returned to the store, rang the bell again. And when the shop attendant came out, he confessed again. So I don't know. And he then drove off. I don't know who he was. Nobody knows who he was. It sounds like a really weird thing to do. But I feel like this is something that people do from time to time, is they try and sort of insert themselves in these things. And actually there were a lot of false confessions in this case, which is just gross, really, you know?
Yeah, we've seen plenty of those in plenty of cases, though. Like,
yeah, the mentality of people going, yep, I'm going to go confess to that murder. Weird, very weird.
I don't know what mental issue you have if you go down that path.
I know, it's bizarre. There were some suspects, though, and in December 2006, they did a bit of a DNA roundup. I suppose, I feel like 2006, early to mid-2000s is when DNA technology got a lot better. Like, it had a bit of a jump in the technology, and so a lot of cold case reviews happened around that time.
Yeah.
So I think they got a profile and they did a bit of a roundup of, like, multiple suspects that were in the area, you know, your usual scumbag roundup, that sort of thing. No one was charged, though, so clearly they didn't match it to anyone. It blows me away with these cases that they just have so many suspects that and none of them end up being it. It's really crazy. Like, all these cases that are, like, solved many, many years down the track. And actually, this year has been a really big year, and probably the last 2 years, for having, like, cold cases be solved. And so much of the time, it's just some rando. And you're like, okay, well, I never would have.
I guess that's, like, one good thing that came from the pandemic. People had lots of time.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
deep dive.
Had to sit down and do it. Yeah, exactly. It's like the, you know, we've said a million times before, the Claremont killer case, because that is the one that's local to us. It's like, ended up being a guy that nobody even knew about. So, you know, it's just so many people that it just ended up being a random. Like, other than these guys that are acting shady enough to be declared suspects, there is also someone else who, you know, is the actual killer, which is wild. Like, you've got all these people acting really weird and really shady and doing dodgy stuff, but it's not them. It's somebody completely different. I don't know. That just kind of blows my mind. Now, in 2019, there seemed to be a potential break in this case. A woman came forward and said that she suspected her ex-boyfriend. Now, this is 31 years later, mind you, and this guy was 64 by now. Now, this guy lived about 2 kilometres from the shopping centre, and according to this woman, he'd been out that night, something which was quite unlike him. He wasn't the sort of person to really go out at night. He did call home at one point in the night, though, and asked her if she had heard about a kidnapped child on the news, which she thought was a bit strange. She said he knew the area very well and had a niece in Amy's grade at school, and had actually told her at one point that he knew Amy and had met her before. When police looked into this guy, they did find that he really did look a lot like the identikit that was put forward from Amy's friends that saw her with this guy. So they brought him in for questioning, and he was interviewed for 2 days. No confession though, but police said that he made some suspicious statements. He also failed a polygraph. So thoughts on this guy?
All signs point to yes.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds...
Hang on, let me get my little magic eight ball. Likely.
Likely. Well, I don't put much stock in polygraphs. We know this because...
I know we don't, but when someone fails one, like...
Yeah.
For them to say that someone failed a polygraph, he's been asked multiple questions.
Yeah. And also, we don't know the questions that he was asked. Like,
no.
Yeah, they could have been...
Did you kill her? No. Bah! Oh, yeah. Okay. You're going to be wondering. I know that they're unreliable, but...
Because I've heard polygraph exams before and it's just been more like, were you in the area of the shopping centre on this date? Do you have a dog? You know, it'll be like stuff that kind of skirts around the issue without actually asking the question. So it just, I don't know, it depends on what the questions were, I suppose. I'm always suspicious with info coming out so much later, though. 31 years later, like, we could be talking about a jilted ex-partner. Not much of substance either for what she is saying, but the police obviously, you know, looked at him like a suspect and did interrogate him for a while. They did find out that he had a car at the time that matches the description of a car seen in the area of the dump site that day that the remains were found, and it had gold-coloured carpet fibres in the trunk and in the car. So that piques my interest a little bit more, because that's actually, you know, a little bit more substantial.
Yeah.
The police also get the two school friends that saw Amy talk to this guy on the day, and they actually identified him in a lineup. So that was interesting as well. So it's not looking good for this guy. I think we can say that. It's all very circumstantial though, but, you know, it's getting into the realm of too much to be a coincidence territory, I think.
Yeah.
They don't arrest him though, so that's interesting, because they have DNA, right? So surely they compared the DNA to him. So either it's not him, or the DNA from the crime scene isn't the killer's DNA, maybe. Maybe we know that the DNA is from hairs of some sort, so maybe it was transferred from someone else. So I don't know. Jury's out for me on this guy. Sounds like a good lead though, and I'm sure they are pursuing it. Final thoughts on this case.
Bad.
Very bad, very horrific. 10-year-old girl being murdered is horrible.
Yeah. Sometimes I find myself just sitting here like, how? How are there so many unsolved crimes?
Yeah.
But then I remind myself that there are so many people in the world.
There are billions.
And those people know so many other people and this and that and the other. But, I mean, when it's a child, how many people do they actually know?
Mm.
It makes you wonder, like, and I know it was a different time, but it makes you think about, like, how do you know you're not walking through the shopping centre and there's, like, some kid with a guy that, or girl, man or woman, that is with a child that isn't theirs?
How would you know? Like, unless you knew the child, I suppose.
Yeah. But that's what I mean. Like, they might not be the innocence of children is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you don't, they're not necessarily going to see the bad in people.
And if she was there,
like, sometimes
she was there willingly.
Yeah.
And probably amped to get her mum a present and stuff like that. She wouldn't have necessarily been looking suspicious, I suppose. Yeah. But yeah, I think that, I mean, these days we've just got CCTV everywhere. Like, you know, I feel like you really can't get away with much these days because you're under surveillance pretty much your entire life. And it's, there's more surveillance that we know about than we know about as well. I think that if they wanted to, they could pull up satellite imagery from anywhere at any time. And there are different theories and conspiracy theories as to why they don't do that. But basically, I think that the governments of the world have much more surveillance opportunities with people than we know that they do. But yeah, I think it needs to be used for catching these bastards, basically. But we know that back then in the 80s, they didn't have that technology. So I guess it just sort of comes down to, well, this is it. We don't know. We don't know. But I think we've got a situation where it's just sort of representative of the different child safety and child care back in the 80s is that we've got a 10-year-old girl who was home alone, which was a completely normal thing. We've got her talking to someone who says that they're a friend of her mum's and she believes him. You know, we've got her going with him willingly because she wants to buy her mum a present. And unfortunately, he took full advantage of that. So piece of shit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, come and let us know what you think about Amy. I think that I heard the other day that they're doing a little bit more. There might be like a breakthrough coming soon. So hopefully we will have some closure on this case because it is a big one and it is quite a popular, well, I don't want to say popular. It's a well-known one. So hopefully we'll have some closure on this case soon. But if you want to come and talk about it, let us know what you think. We'll see you guys next week. Bye.
Bye. Yeah, I just went down to the shop and got myself a generic dog. Yeah. Generic hair.
Well, you do get generic dogs. You get those bitses that just look like nothing.
Yeah, that's true. We call them a Pilbara special here.
Ah, yes. Yes. Yeah.
Or some people refer to them as like...
Heinz variety.
Yeah. Or like people with like the little fluffy ones.
Oh, Dunnybrush dog.
It's a Moodle. It's a mongrel.
Yeah.
It's a Maltese cross poodle.
Like when it's people come into the clinic and they're like, it's a purebred Lhasa Apso cross Maltese. It's a Lhasa tease. And you just put in crossbreed
in the computer. They are two different breeds. You cannot have a purebred mixed breed.
Hey, I was around in the industry when Labradoodles became a new thing. Thank you. So I was around for the start of
it. And how did that go? The guy that invented them regrets what he did.
Oh, yeah, because he made a complete mutant dog. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, when they first came out and people would be like, it's a purebred Labradoodle. And I'm like, it's a Labrador cross.
It's still my favorite when I can't put in Cavoodle, so I put in Cavalier cross Poodle, and then it shows up on someone's vaccination certificate, and then they lose their shit. And I'm like, I can't help you. There is no such thing as a Cavoodle in the system. Can't. What do you want me to do? I don't care. Just the program.
I don't care that you paid $5,000 for it. It isn't a purebred dog. Anyway, we're off track. You got us talking about dog hair. That was the end of it.